Doesn't that computer know who you
are? Don't they have any idea?
Bow down to the Tech Talk host.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Behold the glory that is me.
A little while ago, I was installing some software, and I ran across this exact scenario.
I find you pompous, judgmental, and completely self-absorbed. Would you be my friend?
Onto a Windows Vista machine.
You would think.
You'd think there'd be no problem.
How could there be a problem with that?
I'd say in a given week, I'd probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work.
Directory permissions with config.msi directory, blah, 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 blah.
This is Tech Talk.
Good morning. This is Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 LPFM, and it's just me and Sparky, Dave Sparky Saganaki. You on with us?
What do you mean, just?
Good
morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. So happy to have you here with us.
Yeah. This is spring has sprung. I feel like it's not freezing outside right now. So. I feel renewed.
That's good news.
I do. I feel renewed. It's warm. There's things melting and all this good stuff happening. So it's great stuff. Yeah, we're missing Jay today, but we are going to have Kids Talk Tech in a little bit. Justin's going to come on and talk to us about some very cool books that were released by Scratch Publishing for science-minded kids. Very neat stuff. Actually, probably almost better even to have on for the guy that comes in after us, Rob Schott First, who's going to be on. You're going to stay tuned for him. He's going to be doing some great stuff like he does every week on science and things happening in science and tech this week as well, after we're done with our little bit here for the next hour.
Can't wait to hear that. Can't we just go right to his program?
You know, if he was here, that'd probably be the best solution. But unfortunately, you're all going to have to listen to us for an hour before Rob comes on. Although, we've had requests to change our show to just be music. They'd prefer just no talking at all. Get those guys off the air. I'm trying to clean my house. Put some music on. Yeah, gosh, yeah. Darn it. So.
I'm on their side. Do we have any music? We'll play music.
Oh, I got music. I got good music. Maybe today's a good day for just music today. We'll switch it. You know, we should do one of those at some point anyways, is just to have a tech music show I could pick out. You know, people would not like that either. They wouldn't like my music. You know, what am I thinking? That's not going to be any better. So I don't know if there's a solution here, really.
We could sing. We could do that.
If you think I'm no good at talking, you haven't heard me sing. So just keep that in your back pocket.
What's in the news this week, Michael? Anything
oh
good?
My gosh, there's a ton of great, interesting things happening. Anyway, I'm not even sure where to start here. So maybe I should start with this way. We actually got—I had not heard of this. I felt bad not having heard of this. This is a big, big thing. The station owner Bish sent us an email notifying us about how Yik Yak is sweeping the country and causing a lot of distress and a lot of frustration for our school administrators and for students and things like this. Yik Yak, just really briefly, is a texting app. It's similar to texting, but what it does is it allows you to completely anonymously broadcast a message of any sort to a limited area of other Yik Yak users. So, for example, if you happen to be at your local high school and you decide you want to say something and you want people to hear it, you can broadcast it and identify. Now, you have to pay, I guess. There's like some charge for, depending on the number of users or the range that you want it to go into, but it's very, very cheap. And you can broadcast this message, and then everybody gets it and they can see this message. And it's anonymous. And it's like a Foursquare tip, or it could be something positive, or it could be a complaint saying, boy, the lunch today really stinks. The problem is, because it's anonymous, people, of course, immediately go to the hate, you know, and they're spewing hate and they're spewing anger and they're vitriol and
not against the app, but again, that people would use the app to spew unpleasantness.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So in a school environment and you've got, you know, children and young adults who are just, you know, awash in hormones and trying to figure out their place in the world and how to express themselves. And now they've got this completely unfettered way of kind of, you know, exploring the boundaries of those social limits. It's just a recipe for pain and for bullying and for problems. And this is what's happened with it, of course. And the schools can only do so much these days. Most schools, especially in the high school level, have, Wi-Fi, of course, throughout. And that can be managed. I mean, back in the day, even when I was managing school district Wi-Fi, yeah, you manage that stuff. You put in a sonic wall. You put in, one of the, you know, K9 blockers or OpenDNS solution to make sure that things like Yik Yak, you can just lock it down and make it so it doesn't come out. Unfortunately, though, or fortunately, whichever we want to look at it, we're in such a BYOD world, the bring your own device world today, that most kids, especially in high school, have their own devices that may have 3G or 4G cellular access completely outside of the school managed networks, and so they can get onto these things regardless.
Right. So is it what platforms is it on? Is it on iOS, Android, PC?
I know that it's on Android and iOS. I don't know if you can do it from PC. It's essentially a mobile app, so I don't know if there's a Windows, and Windows 8 versions tend to be very slow and few and far between. Now I do know that Yik Yak themselves actually stepped up and shut down access to the app in the Chicagoland area, because this came up very, very dramatically, I guess to say, in the Chicagoland area, where all of a sudden Whitney Young High School, a number of other schools, I can't remember where Bish sent us his information from, but nearby high schools and areas were very, very upset and sending letters to parents and back to home saying, hey, we're doing this, we've noticed this as an issue, and we're trying to figure a way to kind of shut this down. Now, Yik Yak, like I said, has responded. They've shut it down in the Chicago area entirely. So, of course, it wasn't active when I installed it immediately after finding out about this and wanting to send broadcast messages to the radio station. But so I don't know what the future holds. Do you think there's a place in the world for this kind of app? Or is this just trouble?
Is there anything good about it? We've talked about the negative. What's positive about it?
Well,
I can't.
So the owner of this app, or the creator of this app, is a guy named Brooks Buffington. He's one of the co-founders. Now, Brooks has told CNN, when asked about this, is that the app was made specifically for college-age users or above, college campuses in particular, in order that it could act as a virtual bulletin board. And it acts essentially like a local Twitter, is what he says. You know, it's limited to 200 characters, so you can't get a lot of communication across, but you can post up notes like a virtual bulletin board. And the examples that they give, if you go to their webpage, if you flip through the examples, are things like, hey, there's a special on soup at the cafeteria today. You know, don't miss out. Get your books quick. They're going to run out of Econ 507. You know, this kind of thing. That's a wonderful use for this app, I think, is, you know, sort of like we do with the Foursquare tips and so on. The problem is, you know, you're mixing not only this bulletin board system, but also to the anonymity, which gives people the freedom to just be kind of obnoxious. And unfortunately,
I'm impressed that anonymity is hard to say if you haven't practiced it. but that is the key then. Well, why do they need the two components? Why not, you know, I mean, I don't understand quite. The broadcast aspect of it sounds great. Well, why have that? Why is that? I think that's there to appeal to the younger demographic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. And I haven't seen anything that says why they felt that the, you know, anonymity aspect of it was a critical aspect to keep with it. Maybe that's something that will change in the near future. This has been used, you know, this is coming out in Chicago right now is a big deal, but this has been a problem across the country with high schools because they do allow people to sign up that are any age. That may be another way to deal with it. Now, in California, the problems have centered around bomb threats. People posting anonymous bomb threats and then schools being closed down and shut down for some time. So, you know, here it's about cyberbullying. And apparently at a Whitney Young school, they were posting things either suggesting that a girl should be raped or commenting on the fact that she had been. I didn't quite get the clear story on that. So really awful stuff, you know, we're not even talking about the, you know, oh, Jamie stinks kind of level of things. This is a whole new level with that. Maybe one answer to this problem is to say you can sign up, but you have to have a credit card, and that would at least restrict it to kids above a certain age, or, you know, who can get a credit card. If you're if it's a college kid, you're going to have a credit card probably, I think, these days. So
yeah,
you know.
and kids who are being maybe victimized or abused on the service can just unsubscribe, right?
Yes, you can. Yeah. Yes, you can. But as you know, I think
right.
I think that's tough. You know, it's kind of like telling the kid who's being bullied on Facebook that, oh, hey, you shouldn't be on Facebook anymore. Well, that's great, but
right. All
my friends are there, and you know, we're going to go.
Yeah.
We're starting to go through a little bit of that in my house. I've got a 14-year-old,
wow.
So yeah. So that's,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, hey, you know, it has, actually, I've been surprised. You know, I know he doesn't listen to the show, so I can talk about him. I've been surprised he really hasn't gotten into the whole thing yet, like I thought we would be. He's got a cell phone, but it's not a smartphone. He receives texts, and I look at them. I've got it set up so that I get them as well. And so I look at them. He's getting texts from girls, and I'll ask him about them, and he's kind of clueless. He's just sort of like, oh, I don't know who she is. You know? It's like, excellent. Perfect. Keep that attitude. That's what I want to see. You know, you got at least another 4 years here before you need to get serious about anything. So that's a good thing.
Michael, he's lying to you. Anyway.
No, don't break my little bubble. I'm happy to live in this bubble.
No, that bubble's going to be popped sooner or later, pal.
Oh, gosh, I know it.
It's a matter of time. Could happen later today. Anyway, speaking of teenagers, I'm not sure if we actually, I've had this story in the bank for a while, ready to use it should the opportunity arise. Have you heard of this company called Flight Car? Do you know what Flight Car is?
Flight Car? No.
Yeah.
I have not.
Well, no, it's not about flying cars. It's about, they're based out of the San Francisco area, and it's founded by two 17-year-olds, and the idea is you can go to the airport and park your car for free. However, and actually you can make money because from your car sitting there, because what this company does is it will then clean your car up and rent it out to other people while you're gone. Yeah.
Huh.
And they provide free insurance. But you can make $300, as much as $300 or so in that ballpark area a month by leaving your car at the airport.
Wow. Okay. Now, yeah. Boy, I mean, you'd have, but when you say make $300, I mean, there's a cost to your vehicle, of course, as well. You know, the value of your vehicle is going to drop the more that it's driven, wear and tear.
Yeah.
Do you have to take, I assume you have to take care of any repairs, you know, like standard maintenance, you know, oil and things like this, but they take care of gas. And what happens if it's in an accident? I mean, they take care of the insurance.
They provide free insurance.
Okay.
That's part of their package. But it's an interesting, I mean, I don't know if this is an answer or even a good idea. With my car, you know, that, you know, I have a junky old car. I'd be like, yeah, go ahead, try and rent this, you know. But you know, I mean, more and more we're concerned about the environment and resources and such. This is one way to cut down on manufacturing of automobiles.
Yeah.
Fewer cars would be needed if we shared them more.
Well, you know, my initial thought, though, too, was exactly what you just said. You know, if I had a junky old car, this would be great, you know. And so then my next thought is, so if I'm going to rent a car, why do I want somebody else's junky old car? You know, if I go to Avis today, you know, I'm not getting like a Ferrari, but I get at least a car that's relatively new. It's in very good shape. A lot of times, you know, it's got the stuff that I want with it. That would be my thought. I'm very curious about this. This is a really interesting, concept, though. This kind of goes in line with a lot of the sort of out of the box transportation solutions that we're seeing that are disrupting the taxi situation. You know, Uber has been a big deal and big in the news lately as well. There was a Planet Money podcast about it that, you know, and of course the taxi companies are very up in arms about this. I'm wondering if the same thing will happen with the flight car. Flight car will have that sort of pushback from the Avis and Hertz rental places and things.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, they're doing it so far without paying fees to airports and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Some of the comments, this came from Geek Wire, by the way. Soper is the guy's name that wrote the article. And there were some comments after the article, and one of them was, Ashton Kutcher is a big backer of this. And some guy wrote, well, I'm going to leave my car with two 17-year-olds and Ashton Kutcher? I don't think so, you know. But you're absolutely right. The taxi industry is being disrupted by these social media type ride sharing programs.
Yep. Yeah, and the Uber model I find absolutely fascinating, and certainly they did a much better job of explaining this on Planet Money. You know, if I had my bell here, I'd go ding, 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 you know, podcast better than ours again to listen to. But you should listen to it. It really is well done.
That's Michael, that's all of them, right?
It's a long, long list. Let me tell you. No, there's one or two I've heard that I'd say, hey, we do a better job than that. One of the neat things.
All ego.
Yeah. You may have a point there. So the thing, though, that I think is truly fascinating about some of these disruptive company models is that they're able to do things and experiment with the economies of the process in a way that the larger companies cannot. So Uber, for example, one of the things that they do, now Uber is a taxi cab replacement. If you haven't heard of it, basically what it allows is for you, me, anybody can sign up. And after some, I think there's some sort of vetting that gets done, but then you can go around in your own car and pick people up just like a taxi cab driver were. The difference is that what they do is they, if you're an individual who wants to get picked up by an Uber car, you have to have the Uber app on your phone, and then you say, hey, I need a car, and it'll show you what cars are in the neighborhood and around you, and then someone will come and get you. And this will be just a guy or a gal who's decided they want to make some money driving around with their car. What they do, is the rate.
Killer or a drug addict or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. Hopefully not. And I haven't heard of any bad stories like that so far. In fact, I've heard very positive ones. But the neat thing they do, so this is where things break away from the traditional model of pickup, is that if you are in, say, your downtown Chicago at rush hour, the rate that you pay for a cab is going to be far, far higher with an Uber car than it would be otherwise.
Right.
And the reason that works and the reason they can do that is that, of course, being downtown Chicago at rush hour, trying to find a cab, good luck, my friend. You know, and you can call and try to get one to show up, but you're still going to be told, oh, yeah, it'll be an hour, hour and a half, this kind of thing. Now, if you're out, you know, where there's a tremendous number of cabs, then the Uber rate is probably going to be comparable or possibly even a little bit less than your average cab ride. But if you're at a, you know, critical juncture, in those junctures, those points when the rate increases, and they say that it can increase to as much as 8 times what the standard rate would be, that's based not just on you know, specific conditions, but it's based upon how many people want to get cabs using the system. And so now what happens? So there's twofold things that happen. One is, you know, you've got people now that are willing to pay more to get where they want to go. And so that's good for them. For the driver, the drivers will get more money if they're in a hot area. And so drivers will go out of their way to get into hot areas to pick up people, which makes it more likely that then you can get picked up. So it really pushes the supply and demand model in the right direction, so that as the supply or as the demand increases, the supply comes to fill it because you're paying more for those drivers. And I think it's a really fascinating way to do things. It's only possible through the enabling functionality of technology and data management that we have available today now and with these apps. It's not available to the traditional taxi model, and would probably, in fact, because the Uber thing is an opt-in, would probably be battled strongly against if the city of Chicago said this is the way taxis are going to work. I think you'd have a lot of outcry. But because Uber is an opt-in, well, for that, you don't.
Well, right now, Seattle is one of the few municipalities in the country that's trying to tackle this through regulation and such. And the three big companies there are UberX, Sidecar, and Lyft. Hmm. And the city council is pressing them for numbers of cars and people that they have. And each one of them admitted to approximately 1,000 people that have gone through their safety training or safety vetting program. And they say that that means that there's approximately 300 cars on the street at any given time.
Okay.
So that gives you an idea of the kind of the direction. And I don't even, off the top of my head, how many people are in Seattle? Is it a million?
I could do a quick Wolfram Alpha on that, or a Google, and I'm sure it would come up. In fact, I'll.
Well, my point is that's pretty interesting.
650,000. About 650,000 people in Seattle.
There you go.
So yeah, that's quite a lot. And I mean, and for that city, I think that's pretty decent number to support that. Probably, I would guess.
I don't know how many cab medallions are there and that sort of thing. But the taxi business. I mean, I was when I was a kid, I was part of it, and it's kind of brutal. To make a living at it, you have to drive 12-hour shifts, and sometimes longer, and they push themselves very hard.
Yep.
So if a new model came about it would be unfortunate for the taxi companies, I think, but it holds a lot of possibility for less resource intensive types of transportation options.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And that was one of the things they really didn't talk about in the interviews that I heard, was one of the dangers of that occurred to me is that, so you've got these hot times and these hot spots. Well, those hot times and hot spots, of course, are going to be also when there's other things happening, like weather, sporting events, and things like this.
Conventions.
So you're increasing, of course, the number of vehicles then on the road during those times. But also, too, so if I'm a cab driver and, an Uber driver, and I've been on the road now 10, 11 hours, and all of a sudden there's a storm, and now my value, the price to me to pick someone up, increases 3, 4, 6, 8 times what it was an hour ago. I'm not hanging up my hat at that point, no matter how blasted tired I am, no matter how ridiculously awful the roads are. I'm going to be making 8 times my current rate. I'm going to stay on the road, dang the danger. I'm just going to do it. And, that may be an issue. Maybe that's a downside to the, to the model. I don't know.
And of course, insurance, public liability insurance is very expensive.
Yeah.
I would think that, the flight car company is doing, they're providing insurance.
Yep.
I would imagine these companies would need to do that as well.
Yep. Yeah. Now, and with the cars now, so you may be thinking, well, hey, I'm not going to do Uber. I've got a car. I'm not going to pay for it. But you know, until the repo guy finds me, I'm just fine. here's my segue. It turns out that the repo industry is actually been extremely, extremely successful at tracking your data, at tracking your vehicle information, knowing where cars are at, and sharing that information, not just sharing it, selling, of course, selling that information to a lot of different places. And so this has started to kind of bubble up. And it's particularly in Boston, in Massachusetts, there's a concern that the banks, the creditors, the private investigators, and so on are really, you know, taking this information and using it inappropriately. And they're starting to think about maybe they should legislate the ability to capture that. Now, the way that it's working today, so there's a couple of companies. There's one in Texas in particular, which is what they do is they provide to their repo agents a dashboard unit. So the car doesn't look any different than somebody with a nav system, but they've got a dashboard unit which is actively scanning license plates as the cars drive around. And so these people will drive around and they'll just let the system do its job, but they'll go into places like covered parking garages, areas like this where they have a suspicion there might be people who are not paying their bills and that their car could then be repoed. Now, the system then will pull those license plates and shoot the data back to home base down in Texas. Now, they claim at this point that I just had it up in front of me. It's something like 40% of all U.S. vehicles annually are being collected through this scanning methodology and available in Texas as to time and location of where those cars are, whether or not they're even under a lease or anything. They just know where you are, or at least where your car is at the time of day, at the location, et cetera, et cetera. Now, of course, you can use this for repo, and that's what they initially started it for, is to take care of these deadbeats who aren't paying their bills. Or you could, of course, use this and sell it to a private investigator who perhaps wants to know, hey, is this guy stepping out on his wife? You can sell this information to a bank or an insurance agency who wants to say, hey, this person claims that they are invalid and we're giving them health benefits for that, but we see their car going all over the city. Now, so those are ways that this can be used in a little bit differently than what you might consider. Now, the scanners today are costing the company somewhere between $10,000 to $15,000. But of course, as the technology is improving, that cost is dropping. And I can see someday this being available, perhaps even just with like a mobile on your, you know, an app on your phone, being able to do it if the camera is good enough to pick this stuff up. And so it's, you know, of course, the ACLU is involved in all this, and it kind of goes to this next level of do we have any privacy? You know, we had Alex Montague on 2 weeks ago talking about this, and I don't know if we answered that question. Should we have any expectation of privacy at all anymore?
I don't. Well, Michael, you've always kind of accepted the privacy invasion as the price we pay for, you know, services or what are some of the advantages of giving up our privacy? There's lots of them. There's lots. No, there is. There are.
Safety.
You know, you get targeted advertising as for things that you're interested in, that sort of thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. You say targeted advertising. That's perhaps has some bad connotations. I would state it as saying, hey, the more that a company knows about me, the better able they are to provide me with the products that I really want and I'm interested in. If I'm not looking for a car, I don't want to see car ads. I don't care about car ads. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
Now but there's also the safety issue too.
You know, there's so much cookies are so much. When you go to a website, you get cookies, and they know who you are.
Yeah,
that's on the face of it, that's a good thing. But there's also a sinister side to that.
Yes, yes, it's you know, it kind of goes back to our Yik Yak debate. Is it there can be a good use of it, but there's also too that if the information is there and the data is out there and it's available, there's also going to be the bad side to it, and there's going to be the misuse or abuse of it. I don't know that I consider this a misuse or an abuse. You know, it kind of comes back to that privacy question again, as to if you're out in the world, how can you expect that people shouldn't be able to look at you and say, oh, hey, that's Mike Kassler. He's right there at the Walmart. I mean, really, that's all this is doing. It's just saying, hey, you left your, yeah, I found, hey, I see you. You're there.
Well, no, it's not just doing that, Michael. It's like, oh, Michael's here, and hey, everybody in the world, Michael's here. You know, it's like, you know, is that where we're going?
Well, it's
universal surveillance.
Yes and no. I mean, it's kind of like saying, you know, going to you, Dave, and saying, hey, let me know if you see Mike at Walmart. I'll pay you $2 if you catch him over there. That's really what it is, you know. And
yeah, great.
You know, it's just taken to that next level, that next scale. And certainly, these companies are doing it not only to support their own business, but they're also investing money into collecting this information and this data. So you know, it comes back to again what we talked about so well with Alex Montague about. You know, who owns that information about me then? Do I own this information about where I went, that I was at Walmart with my car, because it's about me? Or does this company own it, this information about me and where I'm at, because they were the ones that collected it? And, you know, I really have a tough time saying or citing on the piece to say that I should own this data because it's about me, not the person who collected it. I think the person who collects it, it's like, hey, you were out and about, you were in the world. You should not expect that that's not a known thing and that you're out and around. Now, legislating the usage of that data, I can see that being something that maybe we need to discuss, but you know, I don't know that you can say you can't do it.
You'd feel better if when the information was sold to a private detector on your whereabouts or an insurance company that you got a little taste. If you got like a dollar every time they sold information.
Hey, that's
you'd
know
feel
what?
Better about those.
I'd be all about that. Absolutely. You know, if something information about me is sold, then yeah, you know, I like it. I like yeah, I get a little bit of that. That's a good thing. I don't see that being practical. I don't see that being practical. But you know, you think about it this way. So if you go to you know, we're going to use Walmart here again. So you go to Walmart and you wander around and you buy stuff and you use your credit card. Walmart now, and if they've got, they can take this to any level they want to. They can probably identify, you know, who you are, what your spending habits are, how often you come to Walmart. They may be able to correlate that data with the location of the country that you most frequently shop in to determine a little bit more about your demographics. If they've got facial recognition cameras and things like this working within their store, they can track who you are, what you're doing, why you're there, and how frequently you're going to come back, and you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They've done this in order to promote their business, in order to be able to sell better. If they take that data, though, and I think where we have a difficulty, you know, as people is saying, okay, that's probably okay, but when they take that data and separate it from their core business purpose, and instead sell it to anybody and everybody who wants to know stuff that may not be related to that core business purpose, I think that's when people get a little itchy about it.
Well, and actually, this is actually small potatoes compared to your tracking device you carry with you all the time, which is your phone.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, people forget about that. That's and that information has been now we know available to the government, and that they've been using it for, you know, for our safety in the best case scenario, hopefully. But it's definitely there, you know. It's definitely something that's out there. So you know, I don't know what we can say about that or what you can do about it, except to just don't do stuff that you shouldn't. I guess, because they'll find out about it. Somebody will find out about it. I guarantee you.
it seems like it. You know.
Yeah.
So that's the way to get better behaved, then, I guess, right? Is constant, relentless surveillance.
Hey, I'm going to try that in my house. You know what? I'm going to see if the kids will...
Well, you already did. You just said on air that you monitor your son's text, your 14-year-old's text. God knows what else you do. What do you know? What kind of... You got webcams all over the place, probably.
Yeah, no, I haven't gotten to that level with things yet. In fact, if anything, what I found... So, you know, maybe this... So I wasn't going to mention that. Maybe this is an interesting parallel, though. Okay, so within the house, when the kids were small and they would have fights. So we got two brothers, and brothers fight as brothers do. When the kids were small and they would fight, we would sit and we'd say, okay, who did what? How did this happen? Who started that? And blah. And here's how you should... No more of that. No. We learned a while ago, trying to determine fault and to go through the whole process of figuring the entire story out was completely counterproductive. Now it's, you guys are fighting, both of you got consequences. You're both in your room. You know, this kind of thing. Maybe this is a parallel, is that, you know, we're trying to use all of this insane amount of data to figure out what people are doing and what the cause is and the faults and all this. Maybe it's the wrong direction. Maybe we just need to say, hey, people act bad. Put them in jail. You know, give them financial consequences or whatever the case may be. You know, not trying to collect all this data and predict everything. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't think we're going to go back that direction.
So speaking of keeping secrets.
Uh-oh. Hey, good segue. I like it. Go ahead.
Speaking of keeping, I figured out, you know, we're going to Conglomeration, a comic book convention in Louisville, Kentucky.
Ding, ding,
April
ding, ding, ding.
10th through the 13th.
Yes. 11th. Conglomeration.info. 11th through 13th. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we will be there. You know what? I'm thinking actually of coming in a day early just to experience Louisville. My closest friend from high school, the guy who stood up at my wedding, is going to come in from Baltimore and hang with us as well. You said you were hopefully going to invite, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, the guy who helped you out with the Comic Con.
Alonzo Bartley. He's a local Toronto politician that doesn't smoke crack. So that's good.
Hey, even better. Darn it, there goes my Saturday night. I had plans. Come on.
Going back to my segue, I know, you know, that people wear costumes at these things, right? At
yes,
conglomeration.
They do. Yes, they do.
Right. And I always feel I never know what costume to wear. I know what costume I'm going to wear at conglomeration.
Ooh, I want to hear.
And that is good. Satoshi Nakamoto.
Yes, you'll be hunted. There's going to be cars following you throughout Louisville if you can pull it off well.
speaking of privacy, you know, the poor guy, he wanted to keep a low profile, and now he's being hounded. And everybody's talking about his net worth of $400 million, and he lives in a modest home. And now, for those that don't know, he's reportedly and reputedly, via Newsweek, actually, that he was the founder of Bitcoins, the much maligned now Bitcoins, now mm-hmm. that their value is falling and one of the large institutions has gone down.
Yep. Yep. Now,
Gox.
Yeah. Now he still denies that he is the founder of Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. you know, and so it's interesting, you know, and this is in L.A., outside of L.A., that he's supposedly holed up. I think it's called Temple City or something along those lines. And it's been a madhouse for for him, that people have just been all over him trying to get some statements from him and talk to him and things. And if you see pictures of the neighborhood, you're right, it's very unprepossessing. It's just a standard, you know, suburban neighborhood. Nothing, no palatial Bitcoin mansions or anything.
No, that's all over now. That's all over now. And Gates is back on top, right, for richest man in the world with $76 billion or something like that. 76.
He is. He's number one again. Our good friend Bill Gates made it to that. And not only that, good friend of the show. Not only that, but you may not have heard this, but the Windows 8 phone has now displaced BlackBerry and is the number three phone again. So this has happened even though Windows 8 sales have been flat. So that doesn't say much for BlackBerry or Windows, I guess. But
that's too bad. That's sad. But so I mean, you know, things can't be that bad for Windows, right? For Microsoft.
Yeah, no, I guess not. I guess they're doing okay, and they're moving along. There's new things happening with that all the time. I think that the Windows phones will be a contender just because Microsoft, although they're flailing a bit right now, I do see that they're, just as they've done in the past many times, they're working to try and recreate and to try to make themselves essential still in a changing environment. You know, one of the things, and I just had a great conversation with somebody about this just yesterday, in fact, at a school board meeting, is that the Google has pushed the limit as far as, you know, offering a lot of free capability and capacity. They've got word processing, spreadsheets, presentation software, things like this that Google has offered free and online with storage and everything else. You can just have a completely internet connected PC, laptop, whatever it may be, tablet, and do everything you could possibly need to, most things anyways, that you would need to do in a business environment without having to pay the usurious licensing fees that Microsoft has traditionally charged. Microsoft has now entered into that as well. And people may not realize it, but now with the OneDrive and all the other stuff going on there, you can get in, you have storage space, and you can do word processing, editing, presentations, and all the other good stuff, Excel online and all that, all for free. It's limited. There's some things you can't do still with the online pieces, but there's a whole heck of a lot that you can. And I see that as being a very positive step forward. And I think that Microsoft is going to continue maybe being a little late to the table, but continuing to keep that solid press of, you know, quality apps and, you know, management into the business environment.
Yeah. Can't wait to see what happens.
It'll be interesting. And it's good. The more competition, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you're never gonna get away from having some of these monolithic companies. But I think that's it's gonna be a good thing. And the Galaxy.
Google,
yeah. Oh, go ahead.
What's that?
No, go ahead. Go ahead, please.
Oh, Google and Facebook are competing now. Facebook just recently acquired a drone company, a solar-powered drone company, so that they can. And the idea is that these things run on solar power; they fly around up in the sky in order to bring Wi-Fi to the developing world. Mm. Google has something similar. They're using hot air balloons or something like that to do something similar. But Facebook, for $60 million, they recently acquired. What's the name of the place? Huh.
I think I heard something about that.
Titan. Titan. It's called Titan. Titan, yes.
And there was a recent FCC case, in fact, where they were determining whether it was legal to restrict the use of commercial drones, and that was shot down. They said that no,
exactly. No pun intended.
Not at all, actually. It was completely unintentional. But then it's okay to have commercial drones. So, and you know, this kind of bubbled to the top with that ridiculous story about Amazon using drones to deliver stuff and things like that, which just isn't going to happen. But there are actual practical uses for these drones, and I think that's one of them. I really like the hot air balloon Wi-Fi coverage deal that Google has been talking about. I think that would be awesome if that ever came to pass. But yeah, it's a whole new world. It's going to be interesting to see. It's good to see, again, that kind of competition level and really pushing those boundaries here over and over again. So,
sure.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, you know what I'm going
to
do?
It'll be fascinating to see what develops.
Yeah, you know what? And speaking of that, I'm going to kick us out to some quick spots and things, and when we come back, I'm going to have Kids Talk Tech with Justin. He's going to be on. He's going to be talking about some manga books that are about science and stuff. So it'll be a good segue also into Rob Shot First, who's going to be after us. Hang on, Dave. Don't go away, though. We'll be listening right now to a few spots and bits and things. You're listening to Tech Talk on WRLR 98.3 FM. But like I said, don't turn the dial. We're going to be right back with Kids Talk Tech, hopefully some cool sights of the week, and then Rob Shot First. So stay tuned, everyone.
See you in a minute.
WRLR, Round Lake Heights, Illinois. 98.3 FM.
Since Comcast came into the Lake McHenry County area as the primary source for cable TV, they have shown themselves to be one of the most community-minded companies anywhere. They graciously have provided our studio facilities with cable TV services so that we may monitor nationwide news, and with CHSI high-speed internet service so that we may stream our broadcast signal via the web to increase our coverage area to include a global audience. For more information on their basic cable, digital cable, or high-speed internet services, their website is www.comcast.com.
Brian's Appliance Repair reminds listeners, from the early days of our country through two world wars and countless smaller conflicts, our armed forces have stood tall. In this current time of conflict, let's support our troops and their families. Let's honor them and veterans of past battles for all their sacrifices in defense of our great nation. This tribute is from Brian's Appliance Repair in Round Lake Beach. For more information, they can be reached at 543-1000.
I always say we are actors in a play called Life on a stage named Earth. Tuesday nights, 7 to 9 p.m. on WRLR, I explore this experience that we all share. My name is Bob Slipke, and the name of the show is Something to Think About, and that is what I do. I give you something to think about, and I have fun doing it. Once again, Tuesday nights, 7 to 9 p.m., join me on WRLR.
All right, we are back, and this is Tech Talk on WRLR. Now, I've still got Dave with us, I know, and also, too, what's very cool is I've got Justin here, and he is going to talk some tech. Now, I'm not sure exactly what he's actually going to talk to us about, in fact. Justin, what is it that you wanted to talk about today?
Well, I'm not sure either. I'm kind of nervous because how many weeks has it been since I've been on?
It's been a while. It's been too long. I think probably like 5 weeks.
Yeah. I had started to think that you were like, thought that I was horrible at this and purposely stopped me.
Oh, man. No. Yeah, in fact, we've had people wondering when are we going to get Kids Talk Tech back on. You're back on today. We're excited about it. So what should you want to talk about? I think you had two things you were considering.
Well, yeah, I know that this is Kids Talk Tech, but you've been asking me if I could tell our listeners about this Korean book series that you showed me.
Yes.
I personally got the first copy before it was in stores.
That's right.
And so that always feels great.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about that then? Because I thought that was very cool.
Yeah, it's called Survive Inside the Human Body. It's a three-book series about, well, biology.
And it's by Scratch Publishing, I believe, right?
Yeah, it's by Hyundong Han.
Okay.
Which is, I'm not sure that's how it's pronounced, so if he ever hears this, sorry.
I think it'll be fine. And so just to describe it a little bit, when you look at the covers here, you can see that it's a very, if you're familiar with the manga style of graphic novels and comics, it looks very similar to that. But as Justin mentioned, it's actually Korean, which is described as manhwa.
No, you can. Okay, let me get this straight. It's not manhwa. It's not manhwa.
Well, just say
it
right.
It's not manhwa.
Just say it right then.
Let me read this description here.
We're never going to get to
Survive Inside the Human Body is a three-part educational comic book series illustrated with original Korean manhwa, a comic style much like manga.
There you go.
It's, like I said, about the human body. It's,
Now, you read all three of these, right?
Yes.
There's the digestive system, there's the circulatory system, and there's...
The nervous system.
And the nervous system.
And I personally think that this is great.
Yeah?
It's very fun, and funny. It has a great story, great characters, although the names aren't very creative.
Mm-hmm.
And it really taught me a lot.
It looks a little bit like the Magic School Bus sort of thing.
Yeah, it is. It's about... Dr. Brain, wow, uh-huh. Very creative. Who created a?
It sounds much more creative in Korean.
Yeah,
who created
a machine that can shrink to a microscopic size so they can go inside the human body? And I'm not going to spoil the book,
mm-hmm.
But it's very exciting.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I can't really tell you much about it without completely spoiling the book.
Well, I know if it's about the digestive system, I'm going to assume that everything comes out all right in the end.
This is the first volume, Dad, and in the end,
yes,
they end up just accidentally being sucked into the circulatory system, and then after that they get like stuck in the nervous system, and I'm not going to spoil the end.
Okay, well, outstanding. This is from Scratch Press. Now, I'm going to put links to this up. I'm sorry, not from Scratch Press. This is from No Starch Press. I take that back. I apologize. And, yeah, there are three volumes to it. They're outstanding for kids. Now, Justin is 11, but I think you could make the case that anything from 9 to probably 16
or older would be great. The sheet says 8 and up.
That makes sense to me from what I've seen on it. I think that fits just perfectly. Very good, especially if you've got young kids that are excited and interested about learning more about science. That is a great way to go. I want to do at least one or two cool sites of the week.
Wait. This is Kids Talk Tech.
No. Justin, I'm sorry. We don't have time today.
I just want to recommend one thing.
Okay, recommend it quick.
The DS game Professor Layton and the Diabolical Box. There.
Hey! All right.
I just met the standards.
Okay. All right. So we did talk at least a little bit of tech. I appreciate that. That was a good idea. Thank you, Justin. And the Layton's stuff is great. Yeah. It's always great to have Justin on. And it has been too long. And of course, as always, we're like running right up at the end of the wire here for the time-wise. I have one cool app that I want to talk about. And then, Dave, I don't know if you've got one. That would be awesome to hear something from you. The one cool app I want to tell people about, I've been using this lately. It blows me away. I wish I had had something like this for a long, long time. I'm thinking now, maybe I already talked about this. The app that I'm thinking about, because I've been talking to so many people about it lately, it's called Kogi. Kogi. And what it is an app that you put on your Android phone. And we've talked about apps that are similar to this. This works great for studying lectures and things like this, where it records audio. So you set it up, you turn it on, and it doesn't record when you start from. What happens is that as you're listening to the lecture, if all of a sudden the person says something and you're like, oh, I want to remember that, this is a very important point, then you tap the screen once, it goes back 30 seconds, 45 seconds, 60 seconds, however long you've set it for, and starts the recording from that point forward until you tap it again and tell it that's enough. And you can add pictures and images. You can add text notes and things to the audio recording. Your one session could have multiple audio bytes and clips that all come into one package. And then you can export that all out if you want to listen to it or edit it or use it separately as well. So it's great for interviews. It's great for listening in class and lecture type of environments. And it's free. It's free. It's phenomenal and it's free. I love it. It's called Kogi, C-O-G-I. Look for it in the App Store and you will run across it. It's blown me away. I've used it in numerous situations now and just been incredibly impressed by it.
Sounds great. I want to give it a try myself. We're running out of time, so I don't want to... I'll save my recommendations for next week.
Okay, fair enough. And hopefully next week we'll have our good friend Jay Garman back on. Dave, it was great to have you on this week. I cannot wait for us all to get down to Louisville. Conglomeration. Go to conglomeration.info. You'll see it there. Find us at facebook.com/techtalkwrlr or send us an email to techtalk@wrlr.fm. And don't go away, everyone. Rob Schott First is going to be on in just a minute or two. I'm going to leave you with the podcast only song of the week, DVNO by Justice. Dave, have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
You do the same. Take care. Enjoy the thaw.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Take care. Have a good one, Dave. Thanks. Bye.
See you next week.
Dave Sparky's Huggin'Huggy. All right, as I said, I'm leaving us with DVNO by Justice. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back at you next week. And special thoughts out, of course, to Justin for his Kids Talk Tech. Talk to you next week, everyone.
It's always the same, always the shame. Storytelling when I could come in. Oh, so many struggles I hate. So one more time, I insist, and I swear I'm in your orphans. But you better learn to read it. It's all about membership. I spell it for the union.